And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, here's a funny thing. Whoever imagined when Donald Trump got elected president that he was actually the reincarnation of Jim Jones, the guy who famously fed the Kool-Aid to his congregation?
Yeah, it's the proof of the old saying that a little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. And we know that he has little knowledge of most things, and now it's proving to be a danger, and it's becoming increasingly apparent to the American people that having a president with a little knowledge is dangerous. This week, to have something, have an American company, the Lysol company, having to come out and issue a press statement saying, "Don't drink our product because
ignore
it's
the president. Don't pay any attention to the president."
Right. Amazing. And this is, as we were talking before we went on the air, the culmination of a series of things that have been occurring in our politics and our country that are beyond the point of where we could just ignore them as being sort of like amusing stuff. The Flat Earth Society, people used to be able to laugh at and ignore because it was harmless in essence. But we've had this war on expertise and this war on science and this aggrievement against people who actually know things because they set an agenda that certain people don't want to follow. And it's being propped up by this libertarian philosophy that we're all in it alone and for ourselves. And now we're just seeing that the president gets on the air and makes a suggestion that not only goes against science and common sense, but actually presents a clear and present danger to anybody who follows it. And still, he said during the campaign he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and his people would still follow or still vote for him or follow him. What he's now doing is asking people or telling people that what do they have to lose? Give themselves a shot of Lysol or some other disinfectant. What do you have to lose? And as it turns out, what they have to lose are their lives. And perhaps the lives of other people.
But I don't think that this is any different than the way he's behaved all the way through his administration, and certainly all the way through with regard to this public health emergency. Because he began a couple of years ago when he determined that he would remove the United States from participating in any multinational initiatives. And one of them, of course, was the initiative that monitors the incipient development of epidemic diseases. The United States had a program with a big funding of that program that stationed scientists all over the world in critical places, including in China.
Right.
They decided, Trump and his administration decided, that's a waste of money. B, because after all, there were no epidemics, so why do we have to have anybody there? B,
right.
Not only is it a waste of money, it's the wrong way to go about things because it implies and involves cooperating with others, whereas you don't want to cooperate with others. You want to just do it on your own. So he defunded it, and the effect of the defunding took place in October of last year. And they pulled all the scientists who were stationed in all the various countries monitoring epidemics and the breaking out of epidemics, they pulled them home. Well, that's precisely to the day, apparently, that the epidemic began to spread in China, in Wuhan, which is where the scientists were, Wuhan. And it's clear that we weren't, our scientists who might have picked it up were not there to pick it up. And then he blamed the Chinese because the scientists weren't there when he pulled them out. And yeah, every step along the way, you can see that he refused to do what was prudent to do and what anybody would have done who thought that this was something you had to pay attention to, but he doesn't think it's something you have to pay attention to, so he didn't do it. It's not incompetence. It's a different attitude toward what you have to do. It's like a general saying, I don't have to worry about ammunition. The other guys will run out of it first.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the analogy. You know, why build up a stockpile of bullets? We'll wait till the war starts.
Yeah.
And then we'll do it. Again, this goes to what expertise does, which is plan and prepare for things. And the fact is that we have things that you cannot predict to a certainty as to when they will happen. You can only predict to a fair certainty that something will happen at some point. And of course, what he sees is, well, there are no hurricanes now in the middle of February or March or whatever, or the hurricane season ends in October. So why should we prepare for the next hurricane season? We'll wait till and see what happens. And if we don't get hurricanes, I'm right. If we do get hurricanes, we'll figure it out when we get there. We'll blame someone else for not doing it, you know, or we'll write on a Sharpie that I was telling the people of Alabama that it was going to come to them when it wasn't, things like that. And again, this is an adjunct of the what we're talking about, the war on science, the war on expertise, because these things cost money and they relate to things that costs the libertarians, like the Koch brothers, money that they don't want to spend. For instance, why worry about pollution and its effect down the road 5 or 10 or 30 years later? I'm here in my, you know, in the middle of Kansas. I'm not drinking the polluted water in Louisiana or Texas where I have my refineries. So why should I have to do that? And of course, now the chickens are coming home to roost, so to speak, except they're killing chickens because they don't have enough ability to sustain the big farms now.
You're making a good point here, because we had another 4.4 million people thrown out of work this last week. We have now, in the last 5 weeks, had 26.5 million people lost their jobs.
Yeah, which wipes out all of the job gains of the Trump administration and all of the job gains of the Obama administration in 5 weeks.
That's a world record.
That's a world record. We've never, you know, he's overseen more job loss in a greater amount of time than anybody in the history of the world. And we're still not done yet. Every week the numbers keep coming in. They're going down per week, but they're still going to be in huge amounts. And the secondary and the tertiary effects of this are enormous.
This guy's claim is that he knows how to run the economy. He's built a great economy. That's why, in fact, his son, one of his imbecile sons, said he built the greatest economy in the history of America, and we'll give him another chance. He'll do it again. He didn't build the greatest economy in the history of America. That was happening before he took office. It just, the trend continued until his policies went into effect. When his policies went into effect, the entire world economy came to a crashing halt. He is a complete failure in the management of the economy. And the 26 million unemployed over 5 weeks are the proof of it.
Yeah. Well, failure is an important word. It's a word that I've used, and I've actually written an article with, that we have to use to tag him and the likes of him, the people who have taken us down this road and supported him. We have to use that because that destroys much of the image of that. We've known he's a failure in business. You know, he went out and campaigned and said, I'm this great businessman. And of course, he was a failure in so many of the businesses, the casino business. Who loses money in the casino business? The stakes, the university.
Gamblers. The gamblers lose money. Not the businesses.
Right now, who knew that he was the prime graduate of the Trump University School of Medicine? You know, he's right. The way he's going out there. But failure is a big word here that is. But as I started to say, the second and third level of what we're losing here is enormous, because at this time, the states where everything really, the rubber hits the road, that's where people get their services from. That's where they get their fire, their police, their garbage collected.
You mean the state governments?
The state governments and the local governments. Yeah. This is what happens. The roads are maintained, things like that. They're losing money hand over fist. They're not collecting sales taxes. They're not collecting most of the states, when the federal government delayed the filing date for income tax, the states followed. So the last 3 months of the year, the states are not getting revenues from tax collections. They're not getting money from the fuel taxes that are there, although that's dedicated money. There's all sorts of things. So they have nothing to work with right now. And I was on the phone this week with a couple of groups that are centered in Harrisburg, and Pennsylvania's in the middle of trying to figure out its budget. And right now the projection is that they're going to be $4 billion short in the budget. And that ain't easy to make up. Don't forget, it's not just Pennsylvania, and most of these states have a requirement that they have to balance their budgets.
I think every state has that requirement.
Yeah. And how are you going to balance your budget when there's no money coming in? And so you start cutting jobs and you start cutting services. And then this is the downward spiral effect, because then you have even fewer money or less money being spent by people who are now losing their more people are losing their jobs. There's no really way out of it. The only way out of it is the one entity that is not bound by a balanced budget create or requirement, and that's the federal government, because it can do things. It can print money. It has the Federal Reserve that can go in and buy up and shore up monies from bonds that the municipalities or the states can float to borrow money, things like that. We've had this actual real life test of the libertarian philosophy, and we see where it's leading us. And what I'm afraid of is down the road. I saw someone put together something kind of interestingly. Reagan broke the bank. You know, he had record deficits, and they carried over through the Bush administration. The Bush had a recession there. And Clinton balanced the budget. We can talk, there's some controversy to that, but he left with a surplus. Then George Bush came in and he unbalanced it again, ran up record deficits. And Obama came in and, he was fixing things. And then Trump comes in and again, he gives these tax cuts and screws up when we could have done a lot of things with the money, other than give it to the top 1%, where we could have had a real infrastructure bill and stuff. And so now he's being forced to build deficits on deficits. And you're hearing these so-called deficit hawks who don't want to raise taxes on the ones that can still afford to pay it, talking about bankrupting the states, bankrupting the municipalities, as if that's a panacea and that won't have the second or third level of effects.
And the failure of the federal government to do this is all the more fantastic, not only in terms of social policy, but just from a purely economic viewpoint, because interest rates now, in real terms, are negative.
Yeah.
I mean, the plain fact of the matter is, the people who are going to lend the government money, if the government tries to borrow the money, are actually paying the government to take their money. So there's not a better time to run up deficits for social spending than right now.
Right.
But they won't do it.
No, they still want to cut taxes more and things like that. And actually,
which is also spending money. That's spending money, yeah. money, but it's only yeah. to the benefit of the people
right.
who have their taxes cut, which is the corporations and in the upper 1%.
And it's even mean-spirited because you had Mitch McConnell this week talking about that he's not going to bail out the blue states, as if, one, there weren't people in the blue states or there weren't Republicans in the blue states, or that he doesn't think that at any point they'd ever become a red state. Why should people vote Republican when the Republicans turn their back on them? You know, when most of the states that are red are the taker states. The blue states are the ones that finance the red states when the money is distributed. You collect more money in New York and pay out more money in South Carolina and Mississippi.
Well, Andrew Cuomo made that very point at his press conference when he answered Mitch right. McConnell. And he said, what are you talking about? You're not going to bail out New York. New York is bailing you out. Kentucky takes $100 billion more a year than it pays into the taxes. New York pays in $100 billion more than it takes out. We're bailing you out. What are you talking about?
Yeah, the Kentucky, I think up to 40% of its budget depends on, to some extent, when you federal money. But it's the appearance of this and what have you. And by the way, Governor Cuomo, I think, is really showing the way as to what a real leader does. And I think he had the actual right attitude. He went right at them. He didn't, equivocate. He said, okay, Mitch, I'm calling your bluff. You go ahead. The states can't declare bankruptcy under federal law. There has to be a law passed. And he says, okay, Mitch, you pass that law. You bring it up in the Senate. You see how many votes you get for that. Go ahead, I dare you. Quite frankly, that's what Biden should be doing in some ways, although Biden is trying to stay above the fray and act what he perceives as being presidential, and he's taken a lot of flack for that. But on the other hand, it just may be working. It may be working.
Look at the reaction to Andrew Cuomo's daily press conferences. People say, that's the guy who should be the president. And what's he doing? He's doing what you said. He's taking it right to McConnell, right to Trump. He's telling people the bare, straight facts, simple facts. He doesn't sugarcoat them. When he says, look, this is how it is. I don't like it, but this is how it is. I don't want to do this. This is what we got to do.
Yeah, but
he's not above the fray. He's right in the fray, and people love it.
Yeah, but Biden, I think, it's working to Biden's advantage. He can play good cop, bad cop on that.
Maybe.
And it's working. You know, at the beginning of this, several weeks ago, everybody was saying, oh, look, Trump's running these daily press conference, so-called press conferences. They're really campaign ads. And he's running them, and, his ratings are going up and whatever. And what's happened is, over time, people are starting to look at these and starting to see what people have said and in some of the anonymous people in the administration and said, wait a minute, this guy isn't playing there with the full deck. This is far more serious than what he's telling us, and his solutions are laughable. And it kind of culminated this week with that ludicrous idea where apparently he was briefed before he went on about certain ways to kill the virus on surfaces, you know, with ultraviolet light or for disinfectants, and he just took it and ran with it at a press conference and came out and said, well, maybe we should be injecting people, or they should be ingesting these things, or putting lights in their bodies, ultraviolet lights in their bodies. And that just was in what they call jumping the shark. It's an old TV term for when you know a TV show has run its course and they get so far out of the loop that, it's time to cancel the show. And the result of that was you're starting to hear that maybe Trump now isn't going to be doing a daily conference. He's going to let it up to other people. to do it, or as he did on a Friday, where he just cut it short, didn't take questions, and just stomped off the stage, where he's finding that less is more and more is less.
I don't think he can let other people do the conferences, because if they do the conferences, they're not going to uphold his policy. That's why he started doing the conferences to begin with, because Trump discovered that Pence was not really upholding his policies. And he objected to that. He wanted his policies to be upheld. And, of course, it's very hard to uphold his policies without being as simple-minded and ignorant as he is. You can't count everybody else being as dopey as you are.
I think you're right. I don't think this is going to last long because, number one, I don't think he can stay out of the limelight. His whole idea is to have a daily show. But he's only a day trader.
Yeah.
He doesn't plan down the road. And it's only going to last as long as he can hold his own, hold himself back, which he's never proven to be able to do very, very much. And or as long as some, as you said, somebody comes out there and starts saying things that contradict what he believes or he wants to do. But don't forget, and these daily shows also have been in place of his campaign rallies.
But they're not his campaign rally.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the crowds out there in front of him. The crowds are behind a silent TV, and we'll just have to see,
I think last week we did see what is projected to take the place of that, and that is this phony mass movement whipped up by the same people who dreamt up the Tea Party movement, that is the Koch brothers, people like Forster Freeze, other extreme right-wing libertarian types who try to promote demonstrations in various state capitals to end the social distancing movement and program.
Yeah.
And I think Trump is hoping will become a mass movement like the Tea Party movement and will be the mass movement that he can count on to carry his bring out the vote.
Yeah, don't forget the Mercers are in this, the U-Lines are in that, some of these other families. The thing is, we'll see in 2 weeks how many of these people that came out to the mass movements are still able to come out. And we don't wish anybody ill in terms of their health, but certainly a good number of them. And then you saw some counter-protests. You saw a few healthcare workers stand in the roadway, sort of like Tiananmen Square, blocking these folks in their automobiles as they drove around state capitals and things like that, and some counter protests. But again, the counter protests aren't funded or whatever. They're just here and there. It's like Occupy Wall Street didn't have anything to coordinate them with. Well, we'll have to see. Another one of the things that Trump has gone after this week was the post office.
Yes.
And that's important because that runs along the same lines of their philosophy. One, it's a government agency, although it is not in the federal budget. It's self-funding or supposed to be self-funding. And it's a unionized organization with hundreds of thousands of workers. And what's happened is the Republicans have tried
800,000 workers, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And the Republicans have been trying to get rid of it for years, primarily, I think, because of the union, but also their philosophy that government can't do things. And so what Trump has said is he will not. First of all, what they did was they required the post office to pre-fund the pension plan. Was it
70 years in advance?
Advance, so that they're spending all this money that they're taking in on pensions that they don't have to pay out. And so they have the running deficits, and then
that's right. It's not an operating deficit. That's very important to know.
Yeah.
The post office does not run an operating deficit.
Yeah. Now, also, I think part of that was that they wanted to shuffle it to the private sector, UPS or FedEx and what have you. But those organizations do rely on the post office to some extent because there are places that they don't go and the post office actually delivers their goods the last mile, so to speak.
When I buy something from Amazon, I get it delivered most of the time through the post office. I don't choose it. That's how Amazon chooses it.
Well, you said the magic words, because what Trump sees is the post office is an adjunct to Amazon, and Amazon is owned by Jeff Bezos, and he hates Jeff Bezos for two reasons. Number one, Jeff Bezos is a real billionaire who made successfully in business. And number two, Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, which is constantly on Trump's case. But there's now, this week, Joe Biden came out, and I think he exposed the more nefarious reason for Trump to go after the post office, is he's hoping to shut it down before the November election so people can't vote by absentee ballot.
That's right. And if you can't mail anything in, you can't have mail-in voting.
That's it. Of course, the problem there is that there's some states, including red states like Utah, that do only mail-in ballots or mostly mail-in ballots.
So why don't you just postpone the election?
Well, that's what Biden said. He's going to try to postpone the election, which, by the way, he can't do because it's up to acts of Congress as to setting the date for the election. And it's,
no,
and it's,
you could disrupt the social fabric such that the election would be meaningless.
Yeah, and that's what he's hoping to do, and then say, well, we'll throw it into the House of Representatives, and he would still win in the House of Representatives because it's they vote by states, not by representatives. So even if Nancy Pelosi has a majority, the majority of states, the delegations are still Republican.
It's like the Electoral College.
Yeah, it's like the Electoral College. So we have that issue there, and you know, and you know, of course, the polling has been bad for Trump in the so-called swing states, particularly here in Pennsylvania. Even Republican-leaning pollsters like Fox and Susquehanna have Biden up anywhere from 4 to 8 points. But it's, you know, it's still premature. We haven't had an election. We haven't had a primary yet. And we have to remind everybody to get their absentee ballots
in. I tell you, in my county, they have a real problem finding people who want to be work at the polls.
Oh, right.
For the most part, people who work at the polls are older people, and older people are afraid to do this.
Exposed.
You know, go out and be exposed to the coronavirus.
And your county is one of the ones that's had some of the fewest cases there.
Well, we have the fewest cases, but we have the smallest population. I think if you actually work it out on a per capita basis, we're right up at the top. Close to the top.
Yeah.
But who knows? There's no testing.
I mean, no.
You just
that's
know
the other
what
thing.
They say, but how do they know what the real number is?
You remember Trump promised anybody back in early March, anybody who wants a test can get one?
Yeah.
We still don't have enough.
Yeah.
We still don't have enough tests going around. So we'll see, you know, we have to see what happens there. You know, and we just hope that the press doesn't get sidetracked. That's one of Trump's big points. He always tries to have everybody take the eye off the ball to take them away from his incompetence and his failures.
Well, the ball should be
the immigration issue.
Testing.
Right.
Testing and PPE. Every hospital that's asked reports we don't have enough PPE. And
well,
everybody knows there's no testing, and we don't know what in the world is going on.
Right. Well, that's why he goes under these things, blame China or let's shut down immigration. He does all of these sideshows that people buy that for a day or so. And
yeah,
it keeps
shut down green cards. That affects maybe 800,000 potential people. Has nothing to do with jobs for American workers. He says, I'm going to protect the jobs of our American workers. But the jobs of American workers aren't menaced by the people, these 800,000 who are getting the green cards. They don't get them unless they're top scientists or in other categories like that. Has nothing to do with employment. It's all a fraud.
And who's rushing to come to America right now? Because since we have the highest number of cases
in the world,
that's something else that we have that Trump has done. He's helped give us the highest number. Nobody has had as many cases as we've had.
And on that, having made America great again, we end this show and let's see what happens next week.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.